And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we're talking about your very much playoff bound, very much looking to host a playoff game if they can manage it. Toronto Blue Jays, three games left in the regular season, and then the wild card round awaits. Congratulations to the Blue Jays and to you, the Blue Jays fans, who've put up with some lean years over the generations. But here we are, two 90-win seasons in a row. There's no one I'd rather talk about it with. Break it all down. She joins me from beautiful downtown Baltimore. She covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good. I am indeed in downtown Baltimore. It's a bit overcast today. I haven't checked the recent weather forecast. I know I looked yesterday and they were calling for some rain today. I think in the evening and night it was calling for light rain. So optimistic that it won't impact the game here on Monday night. And I think they're also calling for rain on Tuesday. So hopefully we get all these games in because they matter.
They do matter. And I think that the ability to avoid like a ugly doubleheader type situation, that matters too. The Mariners, of course, the team the closest to the Blue Jays, the team that the magic number currently sits at 2 for the Blue Jays to clinch home field during that wild card round. The Mariners have 4 games left, including a doubleheader on Tuesday against the Tigers. Now, the Tigers are bad, but asking a team to sweep a doubleheader to avoid going on the road is a lot. So if the Blue Jays can avoid a doubleheader, if the Blue Jays can avoid piling up innings on starters, relievers, everybody in between, better than not. Of course, this is, as I said off the top, the Spin Rate, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. We do the show twice a week, one with Caitlin and I, one with me and former Blue Jays All-Star Ricky Romero. We do it later in the week, talking about the Blue Jays and often other things too. We had Mark Szczepanski on last week and he told a ghost story, which was not something I had on my bingo card at the beginning of the season. That wasn't even something I had on my bingo card at the beginning of that episode. So if you haven't heard, A, Mark Szczepanski appear like a ghost himself suddenly in the Zoom chat, or if you haven't heard that episode, check it out. And then Caitlin and I breaking it all down. So the Blue Jays are hot on the heels of a sweep of the Red Sox, winning all the games that they have to win. Here we are, there's 3 games left. And I guess the question I keep coming back to is, how much differently did we hope or think the Blue Jays season was going to look at this point? I guess the idea would, or the thought would be, they should have or could have won the division. But here we are, 3 games left. The Blue Jays offense is absolutely terrorizing the American League, as it has been for the last month. This looks like a pretty good team. I don't know. We've kind of bounced this idea back and forth a little bit, you and I, but the idea of like, is it a disappointment? I mean, obviously the season's not over yet. They've won 90 games. They could win as many as 93, which would be obviously an improvement over last season. But like, this is kind of what it's starting to feel. Again, playing the Red Sox is one thing, but it's starting to feel like the team that I think people expected it to be. Like just beating the crap out of people, scoring runs in bunches, a very long lineup. Obviously right now, Teoscar Hernandez swinging a great bat, Bo Bichette swinging a great bat, George Springer doing George Springer things, the best bottom of the order in baseball when you compare it to the rest of the bottoms of the order. Like, this is a pretty scary team right now. I don't know that I feel like the Blue Jays are going to be the favorite in the wild card round. And I don't know, they feel pretty scary right now. They feel like they're coming close to being firing on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it is hard to get a good read on the Blue Jays against the Red Sox because for whatever reason, the Blue Jays have just been completely and utterly dominant against the Red Sox this year. They finished, I believe, 16-3 against them. I don't even remember those 3 losses. They happened in the first half because the Jays have swept the last 2 times they played the Red Sox. I remember one at home. They won 1 game in Toronto. They just look like they're in another like world against the Red Sox. It's like the Red Sox can't do anything against them. That skews it a little bit, but certainly the Jays look like they're playing their best baseball in September. I think losing 2 of 3 to the Yankees was a little bit disappointing. I can somewhat give the Blue Jays a bit of a pass on that one just because the Aaron Judge stuff was overwhelming. It was kind of almost suffocating of that series. Like, it was obviously he got number 61 in that, I guess it was the last game against them. And it just felt like no other storyline could exist alongside the Aaron Judge thing. And I think it was just a very weird experience for the pitchers. They kind of had to keep getting out of their rhythm because of the balls. And it was just all this stuff was made of it. And so I kind of give the Jays a bit of a pass. I think they should have wanted to win that series, but whatever. They rebounded completely against the Red Sox. Good. They won those games that they needed to win. They put themselves in a really good spot. So like you said, 2 games, magic number is 2. So a combination of a Jays win and a Mariners loss would be enough for the Blue Jays to host the wild card series. It still could be against, I believe, Tampa or the Mariners. That's still kind of up in the air. To me, it's leaning Mariners at this point. And the Rays, I believe, are playing Boston in Boston. And like you said, the Mariners are playing Detroit, who aren't a great team, but the A's aren't a great team, and they beat the Mariners yesterday. So I think that the Blue Jays are in a good position to host. Certainly the way that I packed for this trip, I'm really hoping I get to go home because I had to pack a lot of different scenarios here. Obviously, I flew to Baltimore today, Monday, and there's a scenario where I just go home to Toronto on Thursday, but there's also a scenario where I actually have to go on to Seattle, and there's another scenario where after Seattle, I might directly go on to Houston. So it is, the range of days on this trip is somewhere between 4 and like 11. So, and I'm a carry-on girl now, so gotta fold those shirts up real small to get them in there.
And if you're going to Seattle, you gotta dress for the rain, obviously, for the weather. But the one thing that, as evidenced by your packing at the time that we're recording, the Blue Jays have clinched not going to Tampa.
Yes.
The Blue Jays have...
Or Cleveland.
Or right? Cleveland. No matter what happens, they've clinched the not third spot. And Tampa is unable to win the first overall spot in the wild card. So even if the Mariners lose the next 4 games in a row and Tampa manages to slide ahead of them, that series would be in Toronto no matter what. So that's encouraging. I think that obviously it's for Caitlin's sartorial choices as well as the Blue Jays' fate. Games in Toronto are better than games not in Toronto. The Blue Jays in Seattle would be pretty interesting. I can't help but think that it would not look like a regular season game, obviously, that Mariners fans now kind of just avoid at all costs when the Blue Jays come to town. But also just the way that, as anyone who has probably tried to acquire Blue Jays playoff tickets, that they make you jump through a lot of hoops. And every hoop has like a, hey, do you want to buy a season ticket package offer in order to bypass the rest of the hoops? So seems unlikely that it would be flooded with Blue Jays fans, but I'm sure there were still plenty of Vancouver and Lower Mainland Blue Jays fans who would pay a premium for a playoff game against the Mariners. But nevertheless, the Blue Jays just keep on winning, and it's the advantage of winning all those games and the advantage of taking what comes to you and again, digging deep into the bag of sports writer or podcaster cliches and controlling your own destiny. Which is what winning games does, and winning all the different games. And the Boston thing is really interesting because the Red Sox have played like as bad against the Blue Jays as any one team has or ever will play against any other team. The Blue Jays are finished the season series 16-3 against Boston. And as I made a tweet about this week, or during on Saturday, I think, if you, without the games against the Blue Jays, the Red Sox are over 500 and have a positive run differential. Like, the Red Sox are in, for whatever reason, have played, I think you could say they've played their worst baseball against the Blue Jays in terms of, you know, giving away runs, giving away outs. Obviously, the 28-5 game looms large. But the 28-5 game doesn't accommodate for the fact that the Blue Jays have scored 70 more runs than the Red Sox this year.
This series alone, like the first 2 games, they scored 19 runs to 0 Red Sox runs. So there's a 19-run differential right there. It's funny because last year the Red Sox ruined the Blue Jays season, and this year the Blue Jays ruined the Red Sox season. Now, I don't know that the Red Sox would have ever made it enough to be competitive. Like you said, they would have been a little bit better had they played better, made it more of a conversation, made it a little closer, perhaps. But it's funny how it worked out this year that, like, I don't even know if the Blue Jays were like, we got to get these guys, man. They didn't lose that last game for us.
It's worth kind of looking, if we wanted to, we could look a little bit deeper and see that this Red Sox lineup is not a good matchup for, like, say, Kevin Gausman in particular. And maybe some of the Red Sox pitchers are the opposite, right? Like maybe Nick Pavetta is good hitting for kind of the Blue Jays starters.
And, yeah, it certainly seems like that.
And I think that the Fenway Park, you know, all the things that Fenway Park does well, it also lines up well with the Blue Jays, who have so many powerful right-handed hitters who can just line dents into that fence one after another. But I mean, you don't expect it. Just like last year, the Rays, what were the Rays? The Rays were 18-1 against the Mariners last year, against the Orioles last year. I guess my thing is what I've been trying to suggest is that A, the Blue Jays are good and they're playing really good baseball right now. And it's easy to dismiss the fact that they dominated the Red Sox like this. But like, if you want to go look at the season series, the Red Sox won their season series against the Orioles. The Red Sox won the season series against Houston. They won the season series against Seattle. They won the season series against some other like good teams. They're not just a pushover.
I think they were pretty competitive with the Yankees. I don't think they won the season series, but I don't think it was that lopsided.
Yeah, no, actually, they got beat by the Yankees pretty good.
Oh,
they were 6-13 against the Yankees. And got outscored by
maybe the games were closer.
Maybe the games were closer. I mean, 30 runs in 19 games isn't too many, or 30 runs in those 13 losses. But I just think that the Red Sox, it's different, and it's one of those things that goes, and you see fans quabbling about it. And I was texting with Ricky a little bit earlier today about, you know, the Dodgers, and Dave Roberts loves to say that the Dodgers play in the toughest division in baseball. And it's like, they don't play in the toughest division in baseball. And Mets fans are saying the same things. Mets fans are like, oh no, the NL East is the best division in baseball. It's like, it's absolutely not. It's absolutely not. The Mets and the Phillies and Atlanta have played more games against teams with like below 425 win percentages than any team in baseball. The Blue Jays will end up playing the least. So, A, there's no soft spots in the schedule. The Blue Jays, I think they need credit for making the games against the Red Sox a soft spot. They could have gone like last year and lost those games, but they didn't. And I guess my thing is, and this is my thing, and I said this before, and I've said this off the air and on the radio. You look at the Blue Jays offense for the last month. They have a let's go back to September 1st. They have a 130 weighted runs created plus as a team. 130. That's like, and you look at the way that they've produced because they haven't hit quite as many home runs. The comparison I used yesterday was that's 9 Francisco Lindors every night on a team that goes through and uses its bench. It's not like it's the same 9 guys every single day, but they're putting Merrifield in, Biggio in, you know, Danny Jansen gets his turns. Ramel Tapia's played a ton, obviously with Gurriel's injury. 130 weighted runs created plus for the better part of the last month. And they've done that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being the least productive regular. If Vladimir Guerrero Jr. turns it around a little bit and is able to kind of catch some of the fire that's happening all around him, who is going to beat the Blue Jays? I guess is the question that I'm asking.
Maybe
this is my homer question. Fair enough. But like, that is an insane lineup that is healthy enough, given the fact that it's October. That's a lot of guys swinging the bat really, really well because they've got so many good hitters. Teoscar Hernandez is, I mean, how many, you know, Astros fans will know who Teoscar Hernandez is, but like, I don't think a lot of the, you know, how many Mariners fans would know Teoscar Hernandez well. He'd be the best hitter on like 15 different teams in the league, and he's the fourth or fifth best hitter on the Blue Jays.
I mean, certainly when he's swinging the bat well, like he is right now, he is one of the best hitters in the majors. And if you look at like, since he kind of turned it around in 2019, I believe, like midway through 2019, he got sent down, or maybe earlier than that, and then he got called back up. And he's been probably a top 10 hitter in the American League since then. He obviously had that great 2020 season, Silver Slugger, last year Silver Slugger. This year, he battled some injuries, and it was a little bit more choppy, I guess, you know, up and down. not the same consistency that he had showed the last two seasons, but still he has that, he has those runs in him, and he seems to be kind of in one right now where he's just so completely locked in and he knows exactly what pitches to swing at and he's waiting for those pitches. Like I saw on Twitter, I think it was Chris Black, but he was just talking about how like Teoscar has one of the prettiest swings. It, you know, when he does get, when he does get a home run or like when he does get his pitch to hit, he never misses it or almost never misses it. And it just looks perfect. Like, you know, he has one of those swings where you like could put it in an art exhibit or something, you know, like if you wanted to say, this is what a beautiful swing looks like, you could put his in an exhibit.
And right-handed swings don't get the same kind of like love that left-handed swings do, but Teoscar's swing is beautiful. His follow through nice and high. It looks a lot like Hanley Ramirez, who's one of the best hitters of like the last decade. Like they've got really, really similar swings. If somebody told me that they like had the same coach and trainer and stuff when they were kids, I would believe them. Right. But like if you go back over the last 3 years, three calendar years, Teoscar Hernandez has a 133 weighted runs created plus. I think right now when we're sitting here and I think Teoscar is a great example. Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette, they are the Blue Jays kind of like a microcosm of the season, because here we are 159 games in and their numbers are more or less exactly where we would predict them to be. They look exactly like the kind of guy that they should be. Teoscar Hernandez has a 130 weighted runs created plus. Bo Bichette's sitting on like a four, almost five win season, right? It didn't happen the way you would. Again, you and I have talked about this before, about the idea of consistency and just like not everybody is Mike Trout. Not everybody just goes 2 for 5 every single day or, you know, gets on twice in 4 plate appearances or 5 plate appearances and then just plays the whole year and everything is normal. It's not how it works. But here we are at the end of the year. These two guys are on balance having great seasons. The Blue Jays themselves have now won 90 games. They have the potential to win 93. They're going to host the opening round of the playoffs, and they're going to be the favorite. And if I had put my money...
Potentially. You're jinxing it.
I am jinxing it. Well, guess what I'm about to say. If the Blue Jays play the Yankees, the Blue Jays have to be the favorite.
Yeah, but they wouldn't get there until the ALCS.
Whenever they play them, I think they have to be the favorite. They're a better team. Strike me down with lightning, and whoever's listening to this is cursing my name, commentator curse, whatever you want to call it. They're better.
But the thing is, like, they have to go through the harder team to get to the Yankees. They have to beat the best team in the American League, which is the Astros.
Bring it on. I, as a Blue Jays affiliated person, I ain't never scared. I think that the Blue Jays can play with anybody, even the Dodgers. But they're a really good team. And I just think that the one thing that could hold them back, A, as you said, beating themselves, which we kind of talked about a little bit here and there, and there was the base running incidents from last week, and Buck Martinez kind of going off and talking about how they got to pull him in and have those veteran conversations, and it sounded like John Schneider did exactly that. I don't think that Blue Jays fans should be satisfied with just making it. I think that they can go in, and it doesn't mean they're going to, but they're good, and they look good right now, and all they got to do basically is win one more game this year, and they will be exactly where they would have wanted to be in March, hosting a playoff game.
And I think, honestly, like looking at their win total, 90 right now, good odds that they get at least 91, which would match their team last year. Maybe even good odds that they get 92 and get one more. They have to win 2 games against the Orioles to do that. I think that makes a lot of sense, honestly. Like, I think when you look at the roster of last year, the roster of this year, what they did, I mean, the two teams were kind of similar. If you take out Robbie Ray and then you plugged in Kevin Gausman, and they kind of had similar years. And I mean, compared to like what Robbie Ray did last year, Matt Chapman goes in for Marcus Semien. Obviously, Matt Chapman didn't hit as many home runs as Marcus Semien this year. Marcus Semien didn't hit as many home runs as Marcus Semien did last year. The Blue Jays in general didn't hit as many home runs, but they kind of won different ways this year, a little bit less reliant on the long ball. Anyway, it's all to say that like the fact that they're probably going to sit on 91, 92 wins this year, that adds up to me. I don't know. Certainly, I think for a team to win like 100 games, a lot of things have to go right for a team. And I would say the Blue Jays, like some things did go right for them, but I would say like, I don't know that I looked at that team and was like, everything's going right for this team. Whereas like you looked at the Yankees and how they started out the season, everything went right for them. And they're going to sit on, are they at 96 wins right now or 97 wins right now?
97. They have 97. Jays have
90. So they do have a chance to get 100 wins because I believe they have 4 games left against Texas. So, like, a 100-win team is very, very, very hard to do. I think the Astros have more than 100 wins. Yankees are close, could get there. But so many things have to go right. And you also have to play, like, the nature of the Jays division this year, it was making it very tough because you didn't have necessarily, like, those layup wins the way you used to against the Baltimore Orioles. Like, obviously, the Jays, like we talked about, like, the Red Sox kind of functioned as their Orioles this year. But you didn't get those extra maybe wins that you thought at the start of the season you would get against the Orioles. And maybe some of them came against the Red Sox or whatever. But it's all to say that I think reflecting on it, like, if they got to 91, 92 wins – I think that's a successful season. I understand maybe people were hoping for a 100-win season, were hoping to win the division, all this kind of stuff, but you didn't take a step back. If anything, you took a step forward. You equaled the win total and you got to the postseason this year.
And I think that not just the number too, but I think that the way that they've done it, how much better they've played in the last, like, 2 months, how much better they've played. You know, obviously not everything hasn't gone perfect. People will all remember, you know, the sweep at the hands of the Angels and whatever else. But I don't know if momentum is the right word, but, like, all systems appear go as they head into the playoffs. Not that they will have, like, kind of won two or three meaningless games at the end of the year to achieve a 90 or 91 win season. But it's like, A, they're here. B, they're in the position they need to be in. And they look more the part of the team that we would have liked. In a perfect world, you would, there, everyone's the Dodgers. In the perfect world, your team that's good and is a favorite to make to the World Series comes out and wins 110 games, comes out and destroys the division. Dodgers are currently leading their division by 23 games, just FYI. But, like, that's not necessarily realistic, especially in the circumstances as you described. But I think that it's starting to feel more like what we maybe would have expected with them dominating, with them scoring tons of runs, with the lineup feeling long, with the bullpen feeling lined up really nicely, and with the turns through the rotation being, you know, sound enough. I mean, not perfect. There's still, like, the Mitch White conundrum, but I think you can't help but feel good. And if you're John Schneider and the Blue Jays, you're looking to get this thing clinched, and then you can start to do the kind of machinations to see if you can make sure you get who the guys you want in the places you want them to do. Which brings us, of course, to our only recurring segment on this show, which is, where today are we, Caitlin, on the Berríos Stripling spectrum? Where do we fall? I feel like it's getting a little bit tilted. We're all kind of hewing to one side. What do you think? Where are you on the Berríos Stripling spectrum today?
I'm 98% Stripling at this point, honestly. And I don't even know that it's a conversation anymore. Like, I think the last start that Stripling had against the Red Sox, it was like, what, 6 scoreless innings? It kind of sealed it for me and maybe for the organization, and just a sense of, like, how do you deny this guy the opportunity to start? You know, like, there, I understand, like, teams don't necessarily think that, like, that way, like, oh, he earned it, you know? But, like, the numbers matter, the matchups matter, all this stuff matters. But I also don't think, like, how can you look – I don't know all the numbers that teams have to look at. Certainly they can go dive a lot deeper on the matchups and stuff like that. But I also don't know, like, how you could look at the numbers that Stripling has put up against the numbers that Berríos has put up, and then against just kind of the sort of narrative, I suppose, of the season – just the reliability and the consistency from Ross Stripling. I don't know how you could come to the conclusion that you're going to start Berríos. I could believe a scenario where they maybe use them both if, you know, they really have a tight leash on Ross Stripling, perhaps. And then if they feel comfortable, maybe if they have a lead, maybe they would bring in someone like Berríos. It also, I think, depends on when they are using Stripling. Like, I actually think it's a conversation in terms of, I think we can sort of conclude that Manoah's getting game one. John Schneider strongly hinted that would be the case, even if home field is still on the line, which I guess the Blue Jays are really hoping it's not by 162. Like, if they're hoping in the next 2 days the Jays can win a game and the Mariners would lose a game, and so they can sort of have that wrapped up before Wednesday. But I think even if it's not, I think the Blue Jays have sort of moved on from wanting to use Manoah in that. I think they really want to use him for game one, which I think is a smart decision. So who do they use for game two? So you have, potentially, you just go Gausman. You have the bit of the wrench of this cut that he had And while it doesn't sound serious in the sense that it's not going to like sit him down for the postseason, you do have the option of giving him an extra day if he wants it. You do have the option of like, if they win game one with Manoa, do you go to Stripling, hope that he can get the win so that you can save Gausman for the opening game of the ALDS? Or do you not want to get too cute and just do our best two starters, Manoa, Gausman, get it done? And not trying to insult Stripling or anything, but it's just like, you know, use your best two to get it done. And then you could start the ALDS with someone like Stripling, or you could go to Brios to start that, however you would want to work it out. I do think it's an interesting conversation. I could, in theory or conceptually, I like the idea of holding on to Gausman in the hopes that you could either use him for like a necessary game three or a game one in the DS. But I can also see the argument of like, don't get too cute here, Blue Jays. Just put your two best starters, 1-2, and get it done.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And so the one thing I was going to say was, if you've listened to our shows previously, you will have heard Pancakes, the dog, who was just barking. But the other thing you'll have heard me say a couple times is like, well, because Stripling's got that flexibility, he's kind of come out of the bullpen. And I think that I have changed my mind on that. I think that Ross Stripling is a starter now. And to suggest otherwise is to do him a disservice, to kind of like downplay all that he's done. And while it's a nice luxury, theoretically, in my head, where it's like Stripling can get hot in a minute and he can, you know, be ready to come in, I think it does him a big disservice. And I like the way that you're kind of game theorying this out and thinking like, what if it was going 1-2? I think a little bit of it would depend on who they play. I guess it's looking like if the Blue Jays are able to get through the wild card round, it would be Houston that they would play, correct? So maybe, yeah, absolutely. That's got a start I would want Gausman. Again, if I'm getting too cute, I'm thinking maybe a guy like Gausman, that poor bastard with his batting average on balls in play. If the Blue Jays were playing Cleveland, maybe I would try to get Gausman maybe a little bit away from Cleveland, just because shit happens to Kevin Gausman in 2022, and Cleveland Guardians are the kind of team that makes shit happen to you. So I think that absolutely you must give a start to Ross Stripling. I've slid all the way to the far side of the Ross Stripling, Jose Berríos spectrum. I think that if you need to use Jose Berríos in some kind of crazy emergency in a wild card, you know, maybe game three, where it's like you got to win or the season's over, then you can maybe bring Berríos out if you need to get a big strikeout or you need some bulk or whatever the situation might be. But you're going to need to get starts from him if you want to win the World Series. So it's not like you're going to send him home, right? Like, thanks, Jose. You know, we had a great
year.
They
need four. They 100%
need four. Mm-hmm. You only need Berríos if maybe you've already used Yusei Kikuchi like the day before and he's like done his three innings, 12 strikeouts thing that he is. So he can make it happen. Three innings, 12 strikeouts. But yeah, I think absolutely you've got to look at an opportunity to get Ross Stripling in there. I think it's a nice counterpoint as well, even kind of between Manoa and Gausman if you get to that point. So
I actually like how it could set up with like a Manoa who, and a Stripling is a very different look than Manoa. Not that like Gausman is similar to Manoa either, but I almost like the idea of going from like a Manoa who's going to be like fastball slider, a little bit change up, but then going to a guy like Stripling who can do anything, you know, like who can throw five different pitches in every single quadrant, who's going to mix it up. I kind of like how that could throw a team, especially if you're talking about now. I think if they lose game one with Manoa on the mound, then I think it's Gausman game two regardless. I think the scenario in which you could go to Stripling in game two only happens if they win game one, because I think you don't want to lose your season. And again, this is not to suggest like Stripling couldn't win or couldn't get it done. It's just that, like, in theory, you're kind of two best starters in stuff wise that you can kind of want to count on, the guys that are have done it for you all year. And Gosman's, by some metrics, has been having one of the best seasons in the American League this year. So I think if they lose game one, you're going to Gosman for sure, because he's your guy. That's what he's being paid to do. I think you could get a little cute, and if they win, and you try to sort of almost plan ahead if you can. And that's a bit of a luxury in the postseason, but you got to be strategic. And I think would also depend on who they're playing, who they're matched up with, and how do they win game one. If they play Seattle and they win game one big, like, maybe the team is feeling good about themselves. Maybe they're thinking, like, we're going to put up 6 more runs again or 7 more runs again. Like, maybe that would color their decision as well. Whereas, like, you know, if the offense suddenly goes cold again, maybe it is someone that maybe they want Gosman, because he's at least has the strikeouts. I know he's had a lot of bad luck with balls in play, but he can rack up the strikeouts. So these decisions are going to be fluid, other than, I think, game one Manoa. And I don't think we would even know them until the day of the playoff game. And the Blue Jays would probably have all these different scenarios mapped up. But it is fun to think about. It is fun to sort of, as you like, game plan in your head what you might do, what they might do. It's interesting how, at this point, we know it's going to be the Rays or the Mariners. Mariners have a really good pitching staff. So the Blue Jays are pretty familiar with the Rays. And they would, you know, they've just seen them a ton. They kind of know what's coming for them. The Mariners, they haven't seen in a while. Mariners look different now. They have Lou Castillo now. So he presumably would be their game one starter.
Robbie Ray started on Sunday for Seattle and did not pitch particularly well. Yes, yesterday, Sunday, and did not pitch particularly well. Robbie Ray has, in the last month or so, he's had two good starts and then a few bad starts. Pitched to like a 4.32 ERA, but with an 8.39 OPS allowed since the start of September. Not ideal from him. In the second half, his ERA is an even 4, getting hit, you know, reasonably hard. Doesn't look like is he walking people? I mean, that's like the Robbie Ray kind of kiss of death, right? If he starts walking people, then he's in trouble. But
he's given up a lot of home runs. I know that.
He has given up a lot of home runs, and he will do that. His batting average on balls in play is not as high as Kevin Gosman, which, as I'm sure many people will have already heard.
I don't think anybody's in the majors is as high as Kevin Gosman.
Kevin Gosman is the highest ever in the majors. His batting average on balls in play of .364 is the highest ever. I've just done it in the divisionary since 1969, when they lowered the mound. Nobody's had a season with a higher batting average on balls in play than Kevin Gosman. And the one thing that's kind of unique about his season is that it's still been good. A lot of the guys, if you look at this list, number one, there's quite a few kind of 2020s that kind of populate the top of the list, which you can kind of throw them aside. You know, Patrick Corbin is bad, but Matt Scherzer is not. So, like, I don't think that you would expect that to continue, but like not a lot of guys have managed this kind of success while still getting just eaten alive by balls in play.
It's because he doesn't walk guys and he doesn't give up many home runs and he strikes out a ton. So a lot of the times when those guys are getting on base, he's able to strand them a lot of times because he doesn't give up those bombs. It's like, you know, if two guys get on base, he's good at getting strikeouts, not walking it to make it worse, or like giving up these like 3-run bombs.
Oh, look, there's Ricky Romero. Ricky Romero allowed a .335 batting average on balls in play in his 2009 season, which of course he was above average that year, just like Kevin Gosman is this year. But yeah, it's been a weird season. And the home runs, obviously that's Robbie Ray's thing, which, if you are facing the Blue Jays, that should always be a concern because those home runs can come from literally any spot in the lineup, from one.
I don't know that the Jays will see Robbie Ray if it only goes two games. I would assume he's the Mariners' third starter.
At this point, yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's unfair to say that he's with Castillo and Logan Gilbert kind of being maybe more of the more prominent types, guys who have pitched, you know, better straight up. So easy to say that, yeah, the Blue Jays might not even see him, which is would be interesting. Of course, the rules as it relates to the border access and Canada changing their, removing their IVCAN, or I'm not exactly sure of how to phrase this, but like they, you don't have to be vaccinated to get into Canada anymore. So, so that's not something that would stand in Robbie Ray's way if he was to come to Canada.
And we'll never even know if he went and got it just in case anyway. I mean, they they only removed it like 2-3 weeks ago. And so like, really, I think you were really down to the wire. I know the Johnson & Johnson one is still around in the U.S. and that one is one dose. And so maybe the timeline-wise still would have worked out, but you never know.
And just looking at Luis Castillo's numbers against, since he's joined the Mariners, he's only given up 6 home runs in 65 innings. That's pretty good. Getting out of that tiny little ballpark in Cincinnati, allowed a 635 OPS against. Had a bit of a rough start against the Royals, but then he was...
That was that crazy game where they, the Royals...
Oh, that's right, Mariners the 13-12 game.
Yeah, the Mariners were really winning 11-2.
Yeah, so he had a couple of rough starts. He had a bad rough start against Oakland, then that rough start against Kansas City, but then he righted the ship this weekend against Oakland and went 6. So... Yeah, it does present a tough matchup. The Mariners have been battling injuries, but I believe that Julio Rodriguez will be activated today on Monday in time for the Mariners to kind of play these last few crucial games in Detroit. But what I want to get back to is this, the idea that it's important that we break down these matchups and think about what's the best way to optimize your rotation, what's the best way to kind of plan and get guys coming out of the bullpen as you need them. But the Blue Jays offense is such that I don't think if you're a Blue Jays fan, you need to be afraid of anybody. The Blue Jays can and will be confident going into any matchup. I think that when the team is going like they are, when they're able to put together big innings, when they're able to string together lots of hits and get their, I used to joke about the RBI ground out, which was like the sort of thing that floated them along when they weren't having as much success at the plate, but still scoring lots of runs. Like if you're the Blue Jays, you can't help but feel confident. Apparently, as I say these words and I hear them coming out of my mouth, I'm like, this sounds a little bit suspiciously like overconfidence. Famous last words and things that I will wish I hadn't said. But anything can happen in a short, and especially in a 3-game series. But at the same time, I think if you're the Blue Jays, you can't help but feel confident going in against anybody. Seattle, Tampa, especially as you noted last time we spoke, that Tampa's not been a good road team. Tampa's not been playing baseball particularly well recently. So unless Seattle sort of falls on their face, you feel like it's probably going to be the Mariners coming to town. But Blue Jays are playing good. Blue Jays can't help but feel good. There's not really any like controversy. There's no, that's the thing. This makes for, in a way, it makes for boring podcasts because it's like, yeah, this team wins every goddamn night. They got guys who can hit every position up and down the lineup. I don't know what you want me to say. The Kevin Gausman finger thing. I think you were among others who reported that he probably could have kept going, Kevin Gausman, if push came to shove, but out of an abundance of caution, the Blue Jays opted to take him out. And I don't know if you, do you know anything about the laser treatment? You mentioned he's getting laser treatment. Is that, what are they going to just zap at his skin and blow away all the dead stuff, or what are they doing?
I think he's had this, I don't even know what it is, maybe some sort of like laser pen, but he always uses it because he gets blisters pretty frequently because of the way he throws his splitter. And so I think he just maintains it himself, honestly. Like it's not something that, is new or anything. Like he's kind of has this finger maintenance
regime.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the word, and he just does it. And it was funny, he like, someone asked him like laser treatment, and he's like, you're asking me to get scientific here. I think it speeds up cell turnover or something. And I think it does speed up healing. I googled it after, and yeah, red light laser treatment or something. I don't know all the technical terms of why it does what it does, but I just know it speeds up healing and helps the skin heal. So that's what he does, and it's nothing new to him in the sense that he's kind of always has to maintain this middle finger of his because of the, I guess, wear and tear that it takes throwing the splitter and the way that he throws it. Yeah, he didn't seem alarmed at all, honestly. I think if that had been sort of a really, really, really pivotal matchup, he probably would have stayed in. But I think just knowing how good the Jays play against the Red Sox and how the offense had been swinging, and at that point, I think he probably thought, like, let's not risk it. And this game is still close. Our bullpen can take it from here kind of thing. So it doesn't seem like it's anything that they're worried about. And, yeah, and the way the playoff sets up, he would have an extra day regardless, assuming that he's not game one, which I don't believe he will be. So I think he'll get an extra day of rest if it's game two, and then you could get two extra days of rest if he's game three. So, or like 5 days of extra rest or 4 days of extra rest if it doesn't even pitch till the ALDS if they get that far. So, yeah, that's kind of it. There was something else I was going to bring up, and now I don't remember what it was.
Was it him peeing on his hands? That was the thing that was on my mind. It came up. The Moises Alou's name was bubbled up in the conversations. I know Arden wrote a piece on it earlier in the year as well, but the idea of peeing on his hand.
Oh, to like treat a blister, like pee on your hand or something?
Yeah. That's the famous treatment. I believe it's there was a question asked online of a person that I follow who was wondering about whether or not we will find Kevin Gausman's name on the piss list. So it's very important. This is the kind of journalism we need you to get down to, Caitlin. Be like, are you going to do it? Have you considered it? Where are we on self-drenching your own flesh in urine? I think it's really, really important to know. I guess one other thing on a bit of an oddity on the weekend was the going to Jordan Romano in the blowout and then just pulling him after like a dozen pitches. Was there anything to... Obviously not something to worry about, but also like that was odd. Was it just purely monitoring his workload and being like, we don't want this inning to get away from you and in case we need you tomorrow sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think they just wanted, he doesn't like to go too long without pitching. Like, I think he feels like he gets rusty and I think the team likes him to get work in, but they also like don't want him getting so much work in a game that like he's not even getting save and it's a blowout. So I think that he just had like a strict pitch limit or like strict number of pitches they wanted him to get. And I think he had like, like you said, he was like 12 or 13 and they just like, he kind of laughed. Like I think when Schneider went up to him, I think he was kind of shocked. Like, why are you pulling me? And he kind of like laughed it off and he was obviously fine the next day. And then he took that tumble at first base with Vlad, like not giving him a great throw. And then he kind of fell over, but he was fine. So yeah, it was odd, but I was wondering, like, I asked after, I was like, did you also want to get Adam Simber some pitches in too? And you just had to like get them all in the ninth or something. But it was kind of strange, but it's nothing to be alarmed about.
So right now, I guess the Blue Jays have 10 relievers on their roster. Does that sound about right? Romano, Pop, Kikuchi, White, Trevor Richards, Yumi Garcia, Adam Simber, David Phelps, Anthony Bassett, Tim Mesa. Of those names, who do you expect to not see suiting up when the wild card round begins?
Well, I don't think Kikuchi and White will be on the playoff roster.
How dare you, may I ask? Just a quick question.
It's also just because of like they're going to be pitching this week probably, right? Like Mitch White is starting Tuesday and probably Kikuchi is going to start on Wednesday. Or if not start, bulk it. So
how could they do that to me and to Japanese Andrew Miller? I really don't think it's very fair. Last three outings, he has a 0 ERA, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, 1 hit allowed, 1 hit by pitch, of course.
I know, it's just a matter of like, he might not even be available for the first game or two.
To which I say, how dare you? All of this is an outrage. This is outrageous, outrageous treatment of Yusei Kikuchi that I won't stand for. It's not that big a deal. I mean, as much as I love the idea of Yusei Kikuchi being like the multi-inning stopper, I just don't think that he's earned that kind of trust to be able to be there yet. And a couple, you know, good outing against the Rays, decent outing against the Yankees, and then he picking up his first big league save against the Red Sox, which shout out to that. The three inning mop-up save is among my favorite things in all of baseball. I love when that happens. But it's like, oh, and you got the save in this 15-2 game. But first big league save for Yusei Kikuchi. But I just don't think he's earned the trust quite yet. And it's a very much like break glass in case of emergency that if it's a Kikuchi, I mean, Blue Jays fans will probably remember when Cliff Pennington pitching in mop-up in a playoff game. A real sad state of affairs, truth be told. But
that was the R.A. Dickey start.
R.A. Dickey started? No, was it? That was, what year was Pennington? I thought Pennington was 2016. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, okay. No, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure.
I don't remember Dickie started. No, it was. It was 2015. You, I believe, are 100% correct. I should never have doubted you.
So, all right, Dickie started that game?
It was against the Royals. Yeah, it was 14-2. Yeah, Dickie did start that game. Dickie started, and he gave up 5 runs. Well, 5 runs were scored in the first 2 innings. Dickie did not even get out of the second inning. And Liam Hendricks came in and threw 4 1/3 innings for the Blue Jays in a playoff game. And then LaTroy Hawkins came in and didn't get anybody out. And then Ryan Tepera had a rough go. Mark Lowe had a rough go. And then Cliff Pennington came in, got one out, threw 4 strikes. 2015, game 5. That was when game 4. The writing was like kind of on the wall at that point. Even though the Blue Jays, of course, did win game 5 famously before. Man, that game 6, 2015. One I will long remember. Jose Bautista, absolute beast. 2 home runs that day. Like a freak. Anyway, I'm so excited for more of this. More crazy games that we will remember for a long time. Hopefully for the right reasons, as opposed to game 6 between the Royals
hopefully and the Blue Jays. Espinal is not pitching for the Blue Jays in this postseason.
Maybe that's a question. I'm glad you brought that up. Santiago Espinal is nearing health, as is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Do you expect to see a lot? This will be the last thing we'll talk about. Do you expect to see a lot of Santiago Espinal, depending on the matchups? Or do you think that maybe Whit Merrifield has sort of solidified himself in the lineup almost as an everyday presence right now?
I would lean Whit Merrifield right now because not only is he swinging a hot bat, which he is obviously, but he's also just in a rhythm. It's one thing to come back from injury. It's a whole other thing to come back from injury in the postseason. You know, you're kind of coming into it pretty cold. So I do think Espinal's still probably the better defender, but I don't think there's a huge drop-off with Merrifield. Like, I think he's pretty solid at second base. That's probably his best position. And he's a good defender there. So I think that you would just lean that to start with, and then maybe you're using Espinal and late game situation, or you know, if it calls for it or something, but I think you just lean on the hot bat right now and just kind of the guy that's been in there.
Merrifield made a really nice play in Sunday's game where there was a ball that was hit to him that I believe was Kike Hernandez had to jump over, and it was sort of a slow moving play, but like Merrifield showed a really good clock and just like really good, you know, the play was in front of him, and he made the throw over to second base, which I didn't expect. And it didn't even look like he really fired it, right? But it was just like very controlled, very smart play. Like, this play's right in front of me. I can get this force out without too much effort. Don't need to try to throw it through Bo Bichette. Just get it there on time and in the right spot, and we'll pick up that lead runner out. And just little things like that that I think are important all the time, but in playoff games in particular, like being able to knock down that the lead runner, keeping the guy out of scoring position, because everything matters in the playoffs, and you start to get that tense feeling in like the fourth inning, like, oh my God, when you're watching, especially from a fan perspective, where it's like, it's a one run game in the fourth inning. It's like, oh shit. Oh my God. What are they going to do? They need to score. Someone's got to score right now. Or otherwise you just start counting down those outs, and the ability to pick them up, be able to hold those situations in place is interesting. So we got Merrifield maybe ahead of Espinal. Again, not that there should be pressure, but the sooner the Blue Jays can clinch, then maybe you can get Espinal to start a shortstop. You know, maybe get Bo Bichette a day off his feet, something like that. Let Espinal get his feet wet over there. And then as you make those decisions. But I guess the other question is Lourdes Gurriel versus Ramel Tapia, who strikes a very unique figure, right? He has an odd place, I think, in the Blue Jays, maybe like fan collective mind. He somehow feels simultaneously worse and better than it seems. I personally don't know what to make of Ramel Tapia. He's been pretty good for the last month or so, even though he did strike out 3 times, which is so unlike him. He struck out 3 times against the Red Sox, but like been basically league average for the last month. You know, hit a couple home runs, a couple triples, a couple doubles, you know, and with an odd, for him, number of strikeouts, considering how well he puts the ball in play. But I don't know what to make. I mean, I think the Blue Jays are probably better with Gurriel, but I maybe am just a prisoner of the moment and just sort of like the idea of A, someone who comes up and is left-handed, B, someone who comes up and can puts the ball in play a little bit more. Not that Gurriel doesn't put the ball in play, but I'm too swayed right now by the lure of what Tapia offers in our minds as opposed to in reality.
Yeah, and I think I would use somewhat of the same argument too, is like, do you just kind of ride with the guy that's been in there? Baseball is such a sport where it's about rhythm and it's about getting into like a flow. And so is it asking too much of Lourdes to jump right in there in a postseason game? I think that he could do it. And like you said, like, he's also a guy that makes a ton of contact and he's shown really good plate discipline this year that I wouldn't necessarily like be worried that he's going to come in and like just start swinging the bat at everything. But also, like, you have to understand that like he hasn't seen live pitching in a few weeks. And so you can't necessarily like afford a guy a game or two to like, you know, see the ball well in the postseason because you don't. Yeah, no, you can't send him anywhere. So I would think that circumstances would suggest that they're just going to go with Tapia and then use Lourdes almost like as a pinch hitter if the game calls for it. Like, you know, if there's a situation where like a lefty comes out of the bullpen and Tapia's up, then you put in Lourdes, right? And so like that situationally, I also think like his hamstring injury, like, you know, tough to throw him in the field too. Like, so I would sort of lean towards Tapia, honestly.
It's just like what we talked about with the pitchers, with the difference between Stripling and Gausman, is that the kind of idea of process and the idea of like, well, Gausman's got a better FIP. At this point, it doesn't matter, right? The process stuff kind of goes out the window a little bit, and it's just like, what's going to help us to win tonight's game? Which is not necessarily how you can't manage every game, like it's the seventh game of the World Series, as they say, and you can't put too much emphasis on a given regular season game, especially if it's in June, August, whatever. But now in October, you can manage these games, especially in a three-game series. Like, it's the seventh game in the World Series, and sometimes you have to do something that might not be the most sound process. I'm using like air quotes, but you just got to think, what is it that's going to put us in a better position to win tonight? And if it is a guy who maybe is less talented but is in the groove, is seeing pitches, is doing his job, and has been offering a nice antidote in the lineup, entirely defensible. If you're the Blue Jays, and that's the way they end up going, it's tough. Like you said, he hasn't played. We're out of time. Caitlin's got to go. She's got work to do. And we will be back later this week. Me and Ricky will be talking about whatever is to come ahead of Friday's game. The Blue Jays will be playing. They're playing postseason baseball. We're not 100% sure where when we're recording this. Hopefully, if you listen to this maybe tomorrow, Tuesday, you know where they're going to play. And half of this is already cold soup of the day. Nevertheless, we soldier on. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. My name is Drew Fairservice. This has been Spin Rate, the Athletic's Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Make sure you give us a like, a rating, subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/spinrate, and we will talk to you later this week.